Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 3 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I am joined today by the man, the myth, the number one EU1 seed going off to the LA Major, Mr. Jojo from Team Queso. How you going, man?
Yo, what's up? I'm doing great. Having a good day. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. We're off to boot camp tomorrow evening. So things have just had a bit of a reality check. I think yesterday it's like, hang on, this is actually going to happen. Back to the boot camp again. So looking forward to it. Things are getting in order and things are going good. How are you looking forward to it all?
I still can't believe it. I it's not processed in my brain. I don't think I'll really understand what's going on until we get there, but I'm still really excited even so.
100%. It's going to be such a good time, especially because it's your first LAN, right?
Yeah, it's my first RLCS LAN. I've done small LANs in the UK before. I've done two, but nothing close to this size.
Awesome. We'll get into all that juicy details a bit later on. But I guess what we always do on MindClickers is we start off with a bit of a background arc, sort of like in an anime, how you have like the main character's intro arc. So I guess where does everything start for yourself in regards to Rocket League? Take us back.
I mean, I started Rocket League when I was 9 years old, and I actually got introduced to the game by my dad.
Wow.
It was free on the PS4 store, I think. And I used to play split screen with my dad for like a year or so. And then it released on Xbox, which was where I played. And that's when I started fully grinding and where I really wanted to go pro and everything.
Dang. And when did you make that transition from Xbox to PC?
I believe it was January 2018. It was... Mm-hmm. I think it was after Christmas because I had money from Christmas and because my birthday is also on Christmas, I had a lot of money saved up and I got a PC and that's when I started fully going for everything and everything seemed to sort of like set in to me. I wanted to fully pursue this.
100%. I love that. When did you, I guess, have that realization that, hang on, this can start to become something? You know, the hours I'm putting in is gradually building up. There's a real chance that I can make something out of this.
I had small moments when I was like younger, around 13, when I was playing six mans. And I think I promoted to rank A and I was in rank A. And at the time, six mans, well, it wasn't very important, but it was way more important than it is now. And I had small moments there where I knew I had potential and I knew I could be good enough, but I didn't really set into like how good I knew I could be until I first started trying out with people like Ryze and Vatira. That's when I fully realized like, this is a big thing. We can do really good now. It was like very recent, to be honest.
Dang, I love that. It's such a nice, I guess, aspect to be able to find teammates as well that are willing and sort of have that own designated drive as well, similar to yourself, right? Whereby everyone's on the same level of wanting to improve, wanting to get better, but also acknowledge how each other plays, right?
Yeah, we were all really, really hungry to prove ourselves, especially when we first started trying out. And I think we all knew how good we could be. It was just doing it and putting in the effort.
For sure. Love that. Now, I had a chat with App Jack and I sort of asked him the same question just because it's a curiosity of mine, because obviously on the Renegades, Fever is sort of in regards to, I guess, doing school, but he sort of put that on hold. What does the situation look like for you in terms of school? Are you currently in school or are you put that on hold as well?
I'd say I'm in a similar situation to Fever then. I sort of put it all on hold when everything started going well for me and when I got on Queso and stuff. I struggled a lot in school and I had a few issues and I wasn't doing great in classes. I couldn't concentrate and I had a lot of anxiety and stuff with my school. And I thought, why not try and just wait and pursue this like once in a lifetime thing now? And then always I can go back and do school and finish my exams and stuff, because I don't think I was doing too great anyway. I just thought it was worth taking this once in a lifetime opportunity. So I've sort of put it on hold.
For sure. And I guess I probably already know the answer, but do you regret anything yet or not yet?
Nothing yet, especially with how good we're doing.
Yeah. Quite a statement there. I love that. A little bit of confidence. Yeah, always good to say that. I think that's really interesting. I think that when you have that opportunity, because I think the biggest thing, right, is traditional sports, there's to be on a pro team or traditional sports, say, for example, soccer or football, anything like that. I think you guys call it football. To be on a pro team, you know, there's how many slots on a pro team on a football team? Like, you know, 10, 15, 20. But how many slots are on an esports team? You know, in Rocket League, there's 3, right? So the opportunity is very scarce, right? So I think being able to realize that and also take the opportunity when it's there and just sort of think like, you know, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I've got the opportunity in front of me. I'm going to commit to it and just see where it takes me, because at the end of the day, it's one of those opportunities that, as you said, probably doesn't roll around too often, right?
Yeah, obviously as well, I think the balancing, if you can balance school and playing, it's definitely the best option. But it really just depends on your circumstances. And if you think that it's holding you back or you're not doing too well in one or the other and you want to focus on one, then you should just try and trust what your decision, trust what your gut says, I guess. I always felt like I wanted to follow and pursue this game more than school at the moment. So I just went with it.
Love that. Awesome. And I guess later on down the track, when we talk about, I guess, career aspirations, is there anything that you were thinking about that you wanted to be, I guess, before the Rocket League scene?
Not really. I've always been sort of like, I'd play it by ear and I wouldn't really make any decisions, and I'd just sort of do whatever my life takes me, like what direction it takes me. The only thing I really focused on was like the stuff I liked. So I used to play football or soccer, as you call it, and when I was younger. Yeah. And I sort of fell out of love with it, and then I found this game, and it wasn't a decision I fully made. It's just something I like to do, and when it's something you like to do and you get that opportunity, I feel like it's just worth taking sometimes.
100%. I completely agree, man. Definitely. Now, you mentioned a little bit earlier when I mentioned tournaments that you played in a few UK tournaments around the scenes. What was that like? I guess take us back to the first tournament that you thought about entering and then that whole process.
For LANs, I played a small event called Epic LAN and Insomnia, gaming festival. I think Insomnia is quite a well-known thing.
Mm.
I played Insomnia first, and I wasn't any like great player or anything. I was okay. I was in like the bubble scene, and I just played with friends who I was also like similar level to, and we took it seriously, but it was also just for the experience of, you know, meeting each other and stuff. And like it's the gameplay sort of took a back front, but the earlier tournaments I played in, the most important one, I think, was probably playing with Jorias and apparently Jack, and it was called Rising Stars. That was the first big tournament I ever played in, and that was crazy.
Yeah, wow. Was that, I guess, at that time, were they at the same sort of level of you, or were they sort of around the same skill gap?
When I played with Jack and Jorias, I was sort of like, I wasn't as good as them, but people knew that I could sort of like hold up to the level. I don't think that anyone would say that I was better than them at the time or like close to them, but people knew that I played like fine with them. They just knew that, you know, I was okay at the game, and it was really good to play with people like that and to have those people around, because it motivates you a lot as well.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I think when you sort of encapsulate yourself within that group whereby other people are performing well, it sort of gives you that sort of intrinsic confidence to also strive for that as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think keeping a friend group of people that motivate you around is always one of the best things you can do.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Love that. Now, I guess, you know, take us through the first time where, I guess, you know, Team Queso started to become a reality, and it's like, okay, hang on, we've got, you know, a really good opportunity here.
We played a tournament called Mediterranean Esports 2. I think that was the exact name.
Yep.
A few teams got invited. The old Team Queso roster, which was Dementza, VK Salen, and Atomic. And Rick's DG at the time, which was Cash, Mike Boy, Ocelon. A few of them teams got invited. We were too late to get an invite. but we played the open qualifiers. We played a lot of because it was called Mediterranean Esports Tournament, it was sort of promoted to a lot of like Turkish teams and all these other teams. So the open qualifier, we played against a lot of Turkish based teams, and then we made it to the semifinals, and we played Team Queso, the old Team Queso roster. They were a top five team in Europe at the time, and I remember beating them and Rick's GG and winning the tournament. And that was the first time that we really thought like, oh, this is something that could be a really big, insane thing. Like, we have the potential to do it, because it was one of our first, I think it was our first tournament, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, we knew we could be that good when we won that tournament.
Love that. Awesome. And then you went on to have quite a good RLCS Season X, right? You won the regional event too.
Yeah. I mean, we did pretty good, you know. Try and stay humble, but you know, it's kind of unbelievable. I didn't expect any of this. And
yeah,
I mean, I thank my teammates. They're both insane. This has been an insane split for us. I hope we can keep up for major.
Yeah, for sure. I guess that that regional two being from Season X, but I guess, you know, that the 2021 2022, you know, taking the event one and event two, event three, sorry, coming second in event two. Still putting up pretty dominant performance, though.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, stuff has been so surreal in the past few months, and it's kind of hard to describe. And it still confuses me all the time. I mean,
yeah,
we were like, okay. And we had results which we knew we could do better than back in the earlier regionals, and We didn't know it would be this fast, though. That was the thing. We never knew it would be this fast. And that's just because we all just tried so hard and believed in each other. I don't know. It's just insane.
I love that. I guess, what was it like for you when it was like, okay, you know, we're going up against some of these really big teams now. I know that we've put in the work. Let's just play our game. Let's just have some fun. What was sort of that sort of team, I guess, overall vibe and I guess mentality towards just playing and doing what you do best?
We have this sort of idea in our team that we always play the best when we're thinking about the least amount of things, when there's nothing bothering us and we're fully focused on the game, and we always have this confident mentality that we know we can beat everyone.
Yep.
That's always when we play our best. We always like to not have to think about anything and just go and do what we normally do. That's normally our vibe, and we just have fun with it, and we don't take it like not seriously, and we don't joke around. It's really serious, but we sort of have a bit of a laugh with it and have some fun.
I love that. I absolutely love the fact that you mentioned, you know, just having fun, because I think when a lot of teams sort of get muddled up is whereby, you know, at the end of the day, this is esports. At the end of the day, we're playing a game. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, why did we start? I think most of us started for the fun of it, right? And being able to still withhold that all the way up until the absolute top pro level, I think that says something pretty significant. But also, I think when you have fun with it and when you just go in with that confidence, like you said, I feel like that the expectations also just start to just not be as much of a barrier as well. Because obviously, at the end of the day, everyone's got an expectation whereby, you know, you want to perform, you want to try your best, and you want to absolutely try your best, whether it be in Swiss, whether it be in groups. But, you know, having that fun around and being able to enjoy yourself thoroughly, I think that does, at the end of the day, reign pretty supreme, right?
It definitely helps a lot. It lifts the pressure as well. When you're around people that just make you laugh and you can just have fun of it, you know, it's always the best vibe. Like, it's a serious thing, and you know, it's a business and whatever, and it's there's money on the line, but you're always going to do your best and play your best when you're around people that you enjoy playing with.
100%. I love that, man. And I guess I think I asked Jack this, I can't remember if I asked Jack this or not, but when we think of teams, or I guess when we think of the Renegades, in my perspective, we've developed a pretty good team culture. And I think it's really synonymous to have, you know, each team has that specific team culture whereby the vibes are, you know, different here and there, whether it be how you communicate, whether you go into, you know, game day and your little pre-ritual routine and stuff like that. Would you say that you guys have developed a team culture of yourself, and what do you reckon that looks like?
I don't know if we even like have a unique culture. It's more like we just do what we do stuff randomly. We don't overthink things. I guess we could say that's our culture. We always like do anything to not overthink things. We're always there to just play, and we don't try and make a big deal out of it. We just go in there and play. We don't have many like rituals. We just sort of sit and have a laugh before we play, and we just have fun of it and just try and not overthink what's going on.
I love that. I love that a lot. Do you yourself have any like sort of pre-game routine that you like to do? I know CJ likes to go and relax and have a banana and just get some fresh air by himself. Do you have anything that you like to do?
This is going to sound really random.
No, but you're good.
Before every tournament I play, I always brush my teeth before the tournament. Okay. I don't brush my teeth before the scrim. It's not before the scrim. It's not after like the tournament. It always has to be before the tournament. Like just before we join the test lobby, I always go and brush my teeth. It's just something I always do. I don't know why. I always like to, feel clean, I guess. I don't know. It's a really weird thing. I always brush my teeth before I play a tournament.
Yeah, right. I like that. It's a unique one. I haven't heard that before. There's one thing. I have a funny story, I guess, whereby because I used to work in traditional sports quite a bit, and some of those guys, you know, I think, you know, football and tennis and all those sort of guys, they always love their, you know, sort of pre-game routine. And one of the guys I was coaching, one of his pre-game routines was to go outside and get some sun. And that was pretty much what he wanted to do. Like he couldn't turn on a light and just sit under the light. It was literally just the sun and getting out and going and, you know, sitting in the sun. But then there was a tournament that was at nighttime, and it's like, hang on, I can't do that now. And then he just completely ended up flopping because he habitually was so used to a routine that he couldn't control. So I think I really like the fact of, you know, if you've got a routine that you can actively control, whereby it's something you know you can do. It's something that you're, you know, pretty happy with, and it's definitely not something completely wild and random. I know that some people like to wear like a favorite T-shirt or favorite like socks and stuff like that, which I don't mind as well. But yeah, I like that.
It's pretty random, but I mean, it's fast and it's easy to do. So you know, why not?
Love that. Now, what are your thoughts? And I know it's a bit of a controversial one. I don't know if you have any. You might not. I know that Fever definitely does. But what are your thoughts on placebos? And I guess people who have to wear like the same decal, the same tires, the same title, and stuff like that.
I think I'm probably up there as one of the biggest placebo players. So I might say I'm the CEO of placebo.
Okay, all right.
I mean, recently I moved to a Mustang. I just like how it looks. It feels good. It's the exact same hitbox as an Octane.
Okay.
But I just prefer it sometimes. I mean, there's just random things. Like, I can't use certain paint finishes on certain decals, certain, like, wheels with certain paint finishes. I think that's more common around people, but, like, there is random things that I just can't do in-game. Like, I need to flip the right way or else I play worse, and, like, my controller movement like is completely different depending on certain things. And when I like copy other people's car designs, I feel different when I do them as well. I'm a massive placebo player, but I don't think placebo is bad either. I feel like if you can control it, because some people feel like it's a negative thing.
Yeah.
But if you can control placebo and it makes you better, I don't see why there's a problem with it. You just have to keep control of it.
Yeah, I think that you could definitely argue it's a strength as well, because it's something that sort of actively makes you feel confident as well. It's like, oh, you know, I've got my, you know, good decal on, I've got my good, you know, tires on or whatever it may be. And it's sort of just like that sort of indirect confidence booster, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, 100%.
I like that. So is that confirmed we're going to see at the LA Major a Mustang?
I wouldn't say confirm, but as it's looking right now, I won't be surprised if I use it most of the tournament.
Whip it out. Love that. Hey, I'm not surprised. Kami mentioned it so many times, and I'm surprised he didn't do it, but he was this close to whipping out the F1 car in Sweden.
Oh, I actually haven't got the F1 car. That's the only one I don't have, because I remember it was 2,000 credits, and everyone told me that the hitbox is weird or something, or that it's too small, and
yeah,
I just didn't buy it. That's the only one I didn't get.
Yeah, I haven't used it personally, but I don't know why he likes it. He says that he can only whip it out like one in every 20 games. And whenever he does, it's like, it's just pop off central. It's like he's hitting everything, like double touches, redirects, he's skims, everything.
Yeah, so, that honestly makes sense. I have like random car designs that I don't feel for so long, or random cars I feel terrible on, until there's just one time where it clicks. And it might not even be for a long time, but randomly you'll just feel like the best player in the world of it.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's a crazy thing. And I guess, you know, a lot of players have it. But, yeah, if you're able to, you know, as we said, and as you said as well, to control and be able to acknowledge the importance of it, then why not, hey?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Awesome. Now, I guess a lot of players that I've had a chat with in the past, it's sort of a controversial thing, but I definitely see the importance of it, and we do it as well, very much so. But what's your take on, you know, replay analysis, and, you know, how many, you know, I guess, hours a week do you think that you should, I guess, be going over, I guess, your own gameplay and looking back and trying to make improvements and think, oh, I could have done this better, could have done that better?
This is one of the most unique things I think we do as a team. We haven't watched our own replays for like months. We've sort of just got into this habit of just all we want to do is natural, and we don't want to change anything. It's like a weird sort of thing in our minds where we think if we go back and look at something while it's going well, then it might just ruin everything. It's sort of a weird thing. I think watching replays is definitely a good thing, and especially when you're trying to improve and everything, you know. But with our team, it's very weird because we're all mechanical players, and we all haven't had much experience. So we don't want to, it just goes back to our thing of not overthinking. We don't want to think about anything. It's one of the only random things that we have, and unique things, I think. We just don't watch replays. We just go in there and play natural every time.
That's really interesting. I kind of like that take, because I guess a really big negative of replays, right, is this whole thought of overthinking, whereby you become a little bit too critical, a little bit over analytical, and especially when you're focusing on what the enemy team's doing as well. Because, you know, you might be versing, or you might be analyzing a replay of Dig, all right, and then get really focused in, oh, you know, Dig's doing the specific, you know, rotation. This is like super specific, but then all of a sudden, you know, they don't do that, or they switch stuff up, and
yeah,
that sort of catches you off guard, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't think I'd say 100% I'm against replay analysis. I don't think I'm definitely not against replay analysis. It's just at the moment where we are now, we sort of don't want to change anything and think about stuff too much, because that's sort of our way of thinking about things. But it's definitely a positive thing, especially I believe that solo replay analysis is more effective than team replay analysis sometimes as well. I think it's easier to control what an individual does compared to a team.
And I guess when you, well, I guess you don't really do it that often, but I think I think the importance that individual replay analysis definitely does hold barrier above team replay analysis in some situations, especially because you know that you're the one actively in control, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's easier to understand, I think. It's just way easier to do. I feel like team replay analysis, if it works well, then it works well. But I think it's more easy to consistently make a solo replay analysis more, like, work more consistently.
Yeah, for sure. Love that. Now, something else I was a bit curious about as well, and I guess one of the big things that a lot of players go through, especially, you know, first LAN, or especially if it's first regional, you know, going up against a big team, is this whole idea of performance anxiety, right? And this whole idea the team's way better. They've got so much experience. You know, they've been together as a team. They've won this, and this. Is there a way that you sort of tackled, I guess, your confidence and, I guess, even little bits of anxiety that you might have had previously?
There's two main things that come to mind when I think about this. And I think the two main things is reassurance from your teammates. When your teammates tell you, you know, do what you want, do your best. I believe in you. It's always one of the best things you can do. And also, an underdog mentality. That's what we always like to have. We always want to feel like the underdogs, like no one believes in us. So we work that extra bit hard just to, you know, win a game or take a game off a team or win a series. It's always like one game at a time with an underdog mentality. And we all believe in each other. That's how we play our best and how we do with our nerves.
I love that. I love the underdog mentality. Mm-hmm. I think it really does work quite well. We took that into Sweden as well. Especially in our first game versus Endpoint, I think we were definitely the underdogs. But we just come out, you know, all you got to do is just play your game, right? If you can go out there and actively say, you know, look, we played our game. We played the way we wanted to. And most importantly, we had fun with it. Then I think that's a job well done at the end of the day, irrespective of, you know, win or loss, if you're able to just have fun with it. So, you know, I love that. And I also love the reassurance from teammates as well. And I think that also sort of musters back into sort of that team culture as well, whereby you're constantly reassuring each other and being able to have those conversations if required, right? Whereby you might be feeling a little bit down or you might be feeling like something's a bit up, and it's always like, hey, no, you're all right, yo-yo, you know, yo-yo, Jojo. I'm going to use yo-yo now. You're all good now. You know, you've done this in the past. You can do this in the future. Let's just focus on the present and let's just kill it together. You know, having that really good teammate synergy.
Exactly, yeah. I think it's always the best. And same thing with not overthinking. You always know that you can only do what you're capable of. And when you're reminded by that by your teammates, you just, all you can focus on is the game, and it gives you way more confidence.
Love that. Now, I know that you are, and I've got a funny story. I don't know if you heard this before, but when we were boot camping in Sweden, I was sitting, like, we had like a desk, like a massive office at the back. I was sitting at the far left, and Carmen was sitting right at the very far right, right? And I remember we were screaming you guys, and I can't remember what happened, but I think you hit like a flip reset on K-Dog. And all I heard him do was just slam his desk and said, I can't do it. I know you boys are just very mechanical, and it's such a good thing to see on the field. Especially, I guess, in RLCS, how much do you think mechanics plays into the picture of being able to be a complete team?
I think mechanics can be the most and least important parts of a team at the same time. I feel like without mechanics, you can't do much, but you don't need to all try and be mechanical and do too much. It's sort of like a middle ground where you need a certain level of mechanics to keep up with everyone. But your mechanics and confidence are so like linked together that with a sort of ground, like a base level of mechanics that you need to meet, that with your confidence can just make you look so much better. Like, we're a mechanical team, but we don't try and overdo it, and we don't do like quad flip resets and all these like random things. But like, it's always about confidence and knowing you can beat people. Like, you're always faster when you're confident, and your mechanics will just look good if you're just confident in yourself and you're good enough. I mean, most pros are good enough anyway.
Yeah, I love that. I love that sort of take to it. In regards to, I guess, practicing specific mechanics, do you think there's any ways that are better than others?
I come from a weird background of, I got a lot of my mechanical sort of plays from freestyling. Like, my first 3-4K hours were probably in like casual and like training and stuff.
Love that.
I was fully a freestyler. And when I started moving more to comp, I still sort of had that freestyle sort of mindset. I mean, I was in Pulse. I always went for clips in games, and that was how I got my mechanics, but I also have loads of hours, so I don't know which is the most effective way. I feel like twos is definitely a good way to do it. A lot of newer players sort of coming up, I mean, Viterra included, a lot of them just play twos, and when you're in a lobby where you get given space, but it's also fast, I mean, grinding twos and just trying to go out of your comfort zone is, in my opinion, probably the best way to improve your mechanics.
I love that. It's a really good take to it. And I think I love the fact that you brought up a freestyle background and just sitting in casual, just trying to just hit, you know, whatever you want and just playing around with it. Because I remember when I had a chat with MK, right? And he pretty much said that, you know, those who come from a freestyle background will have that mechanics advantage, right? And I think it very much does reign true. And then I guess being able to combine that and learn just more of the, I guess, whether it be, you know, one's mechanics or two's mechanics, and then being able to just translate that into a threes format, I think if you're able to, you know, have that sort of team synergy on top of, you know, everyone being a mech gods, then, you know, you end up like you boys.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I don't know many people who came from a freestyle background, but I feel like me and Breezy are the most probably common brought up ones, and like we definitely do things a bit differently to even most mechanical players. It's it's sort of a weird way of doing things, but it's like a we've had to adapt to comp more. I mean, Breezy was less of a freestyler than I was. He was more always like comp, but I it's sort of like a similar thing, and like that sort of way of playing, it is good, and you probably do get a mechanical advantage at least at the start, but the way to adapt is it takes a lot longer than just twos players and ones players. It's a lot shorter for them, I think. It's sort of a weird sort of way. I mean, me and Breezy have so much time in the game. If you look at Breezy's hours, I think a lot of them are AFK, but he's got like 14k hours, and I've got count Xbox and PC, I think I have 11k,
yeah,
10k.
Right.
Like, you definitely have to put in a lot more time to adapt, but if you can, I think it's definitely worth it.
I like that. I like that a lot. And I like the fact that you mentioned ones. Do you think that those who come from a ones background rather than picking up the game and just playing threes purely have that advantage?
Ones is sort of a weird, really weird categories of the game where we've seen so many people get good at the game who started in ones. Example, apparently Jack. I mean, even people like Fairy Peak played a lot of ones. Scribkiller played a lot of ones.
Yeah,
there's a load of really good players from ones, but like, especially recently, I don't actually think there's been many people coming from ones, and I don't know why that is. But ones can definitely be good. I think it just depends how you play it, because ones now is very similar to like, just you get a free solo play and you go for an edge roll bump or you go for a flick and you just sit in there and wait to save it. Whereas I think you'd a lot of ones players would be a lot easier adapting to freeze if, you know, they went out their comfort zone a bit. I think a lot of freeze is getting out your comfort zone and trying things that you might have never before, unless like learning something new. And that's why I think twos players normally at least have the best chance in freeze. Ranked twos, I think, is the best way. Because you get that space and time, but like people are still fast and they're just pre-jumping you and stuff, and they don't leave the ball.
Yeah, I do like that take as well. I think that you can make sort of positive negatives towards once, because it is that sort of isolated gameplay where it is yourself and it's sort of that constant pressure. But I think the other positive, I guess, aspect to it is that you do, I guess, over time get more ball time. I guess you could make the argument.
True.
And I think that was one of the points that I had a chat about previously, whereby, yeah, I guess if you're a new player that is starting out in, you know, some of the lower ranks, you know, trying ones and just getting more ball time, hitting the ball, learning how to take it up the wall, learning how to dribble it, you know, it just helps to facilitate the earlier skill levels just pretty nicely, I think.
Yeah, I think ones is probably a lot more effective at sort of the lower tier part of the game or the lower ranks and stuff. A lot of ball time is good. It's just when it's sort of like that bubble player to pro like player sort of area where like everything has to be done fast and you always have to think of something on the spot. That's when I think that's not all ones players, but some ones players have a lot of issue adapting, because you can't just do the same 1v1 plays over and over again. And I can't comment fully, because I don't have much of a history in ones. But people like Jack play ones in a way where like it might seem like he's not doing much, but he's definitely like trying some things that a lot of ones players wouldn't as well. And like Monkey Moon is just like so good at everything. He can just try random stuff in ones and it'll work. I mean, I know Jory is just freestyles in ones now, and it probably helps him a lot more because he's playing in a way where, you know, he's not just practicing the same thing over and over again. He's trying a bit of everything, and I think in a game like Rocket League where it's so random and just anything can happen, like trying to cover a lot of bases normally works the best.
I like that. I like that a lot. I think it is really interesting, the sort of debate between ones, twos and threes and I guess what that comes from. And I think that I don't know, was it recently? Maybe it was on Johnny Boy's stream. I can't remember. Someone said, I guess, having two regionals and then the third regional being a 1v1 or a 2v2 regional. And I think that's a bit of a wild idea.
Oh, I don't know. That would be so random. I feel like people would start getting like subs who are like top 20 and ones and like subbing them in for the... It would be interesting. It would definitely be an interesting thing to see. I don't know if I'm with the idea, but it would definitely be interesting to see what happened. Like, maybe a compromise, if that was something that people wanted, would be like the sort of an off-branch thing. It's not a main tournament, but Psyonix, or not Psyonix, sorry, that's like whoever's sponsoring the tournaments. I don't know if it's Epic. I don't even know, but make some sort of league or just anything. It doesn't have to be as big, but smaller for these like ones and twos players to just play their own mode that they enjoy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think that, I guess on the back end of that, and it's a bit of an obscure question, if there was something you could change about the game, what would you change? I know there was conversations about a bigger map. Is that something you'd be for? What do you reckon? What do you think a change could be?
I think in the position I am now as well, because I've only shortly like got into a place where I'd say we're doing pretty well and stuff. My mind is fully set on the game staying the same, because I've only just got to a position where I can play at the highest level. So I find it hard to think of stuff to change that would like be nice in my mind. Like, I just want it to be the same, at least for a short amount of time.
Yeah,
I can understand people wanting like changes and stuff. And I guess you could say the game could get kind of stale or boring to watch, but like just from my position, it's hard to sort of think of anything that would please me, at least. Like, maybe they should fix the black screens.
I remember on land, there was like someone got a black screen 4 times in a row. It was crazy.
Yeah, I was doing an in-house private match with people, and it was like, you have to change the map, but the person who was hosting was very stubborn.
Yeah.
And they wanted Manfield Knight, and we got like 3 or 4 in a row as well. Like, there's been so many updates and it's still a thing, and they haven't, at least I haven't seen them speaking about it. It's, I don't know what it is to fix it, but like, it is crazy. It happens so much.
On the topic of maps, I just thought of a really interesting perspective as well. But I just forgot it then. What was I going to say? So I guess here in OCE, some of the guys, some of the teams, when they scrim, they change the map after every game. Is that something that happens in EU?
I think it's Endpoint that do that. Endpoint and Rise did it for a bit. We don't do it anymore, but when Rise used to host our scrims, we would, and Endpoint, we both did RCS rotations. It would be the same maps as RCS.
Yeah.
And I think it is, it does make the scrim more fun, to be honest. I do like that sort of thing where, but like a lot of teams in EU complain about it. I mean, I guess it depends on the map, but I mean, a scrim of Endpoint's always fun because the map's changing and, you know, it feels different, I guess. It's different to most scrims where you just on Manfield Knight every single time.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, do you think that a negative could be that you get so accustomed to having it's Neo Tokyo, this is our map, or hey, it's, you know, whatever map it be, this is the map that we played bad on in scrims. Do you think that by doing that, you can develop a bias towards maps?
Probably. I think that definitely could be. I know we had a thing where we always knew we would win on Wasteland. That was a thing we had.
Yeah.
We always knew we'd win when we got on Wasteland. But I think when it was with us, it was more of what game it was in the series. I don't know if it was the map. But, I mean, I guess it would be a bad thing. Even I don't have placebo like that, though. I mean,
yeah.
I guess it depends on the map, but if you're getting like biases to certain maps, I feel like when in RCS they change it every game, it's probably a bad thing to have. Like, you'd sort of need to be the same on every map, or else you're going to be inconsistent.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Now, you mentioned game there, and I guess game score as well. I think within, you know, something like a best of 7, the big one in the big mountain that a lot of people have to climb over in different situations, right, is the whole idea of being 3-0 down and having to reverse sweep. That's a tough one for a lot of people, because it's like, you know, we're right on the bridge. One mistake could sort of just end it all. And I guess, you know, when you're in that situation, what are the thoughts?
We reverse sweep a lot, I think, actually. Mm. Like the regional we won recently, regional 3.
Yep.
We were 0-2 in groups, and we were 2-0 down to Vitality in groups. We were one game away, and we took it to 5 and won it.
Mm.
I feel like the way we see it is when we're on that game or that part of the series where we're about to lose it, like, we just think that everything is on the line and we need to win. Like, there's no excuses now. We need to win. I think it's probably because of our underdog mentality as well. Like, we need to prove people wrong. But I feel like it's probably a big hurdle for a lot of people, because even if they don't show it, I think in a lot of people's minds, when they go down that amount of games, they just give up. And, like, it might not be, like, on display and they might not show it, but a lot of people definitely think, oh, it's over. Like, we can't bring this back. It's too impossible. Like, that's just something that probably would happen to a lot of people. I know it's happened to me at times, not recently, but, like, I definitely have felt like that at times, even if I haven't said it or anything. It's a really weird way to think about it, because, I mean, you're still in the game. Like, you might as well show everyone, like, the most of what you got, what you can.
Yeah. No, I really like that take. I think that the most important thing, and the thing that I used to previously stress as well, is the first time you do a reverse sweep, it's sort of like, you know, we did that. You know, we really mustered that.
Yeah.
And then when you're in that situation next time, it's like, hang on, you know, we've been in this situation before and we've done it. So at the end of the day, there's no excuse that we can't do it again. And I think being able to have that sort of reflection based on previous experiences allows you to really just highlight the fact of, yeah, okay, this is just that situation again. Let's just take it goal by goal. Let's take it game by game. And if we can just do that and take it our pace, then we'll come out on top.
Yeah, that could definitely be true. I mean, I just remembered this, but our first series of any RCS ever, we played the Invitational Qualifiers because we got an invite at, like, the 13th seed because of our off-season results. Our first series ever was a reverse sweep, like, in all of RCS. It was against Giants, and it was a really long series. The last game was like a 5-minute overtime, and
dang.
I feel like it definitely could play a part in it, because I can't comment on what it's like to not know the feeling of a reverse sweep, and, like, because that's where we started. I mean, that was our first series in RCS. Like, we always just thought we've always had this hunger since we first started trying out that, you know, we can do anything. Like, everyone doubts us and no one knows how good we can be except for us, so we need to prove it to everyone. And that's always been our mentality, and this underdog mentality has always helped us. And I think that, like, never giving up and knowing that you're still in the game, like, you can just take it one game at a time, and, I mean, anything's possible if you're still playing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe that could have been a blessing in disguise, maybe, having the first game a reverse sweep and just being able to set that pace. It's like, okay, we did this. We're in LCS. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. I think that definitely could have played a good role into us, you know, feeling like we can do anything and keeping that sort of mentality even when we're on game point and about to get swept.
Love that. Powerful stuff, man. Love that. Is the same mentality as well when it's game 7 OT, whereby it's like, okay, one game, one goal pretty much is the dictator of everything now. Let's just make sure we score that goal.
Yeah, we first split. This is something that I do have experience with. Our first split, I don't know the exact stat, but it was our game 5 and 7, our match point ratio was, like, terrible. I think we won 2 and lost. I could be wrong here. I don't know the stats. I think we lost 8 or 9 and won 2. And I just remember after that split, I was so, like, sad and, like, not sad in a way that I'd given up, but I just never wanted that to happen again. And I took that, like, sort of sadness and, like, being angry, and I sort of tried to make it into motivation. And I think we all sort of did that, because this split, I think our I don't think it's exactly flipped, but we have like an 80% win record in match points, or 90%. Mm. And I just think this game is really, really strong on mentality. And I don't know how much of it's gameplay and how much of it's mentality, but you definitely can't have one without the other.
Yep. Love that. That's really good. I guess the gameplay and mentality aspect, you can make a really another sort of connection into sort of the coaching scene as well, whereby some teams have a gameplay coach, some teams have a mentality coach, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that one's better than the other, or they're tied, or I guess if the players, because I guess from the way that I look at it, the players themselves, you know, they know what's best for them. They know what they need to do, you know, in regards to their own way, and they know what they need to change. So do you think that there's a difference between the two?
We're in a very similar position to that, where us as a free, me, Raz, Vatera, we all trust ourselves to know or to think that we know what's best for us. And we have Nick, our coach. Shout out, Nick.
Hey, shout out to him. Let's get that.
Originally, we had him as a gameplay coach. And after split one, we sort of had a talk, and we had him in this position of being more mentality based. I know that BDS, I think Kale, I don't know exactly what if he does any gameplay. I don't think he does, but Kale is definitely a lot more based around mentality. Mm-hmm. And we sort of wanted to try a similar thing. And I mean, we think it's definitely worked for us. I don't know what is better than the other, to be honest. For us, at least, we definitely prefer a mentality coach. But I would assume it would be different for each player and every individual, because I mean, everyone's different and everyone plays better a certain way. But us as a free, we've always liked to do things our own way and be natural with how we play, and sort of like let us take the reins and have someone behind us supporting us more than telling us what to do.
Yeah, I really like that sort of aspect. I think it's crucial to have that outlet as well, whereby, you know, you can have problems that are inside the game, but, you know, there's also problems that are outside the game, right? And being able to have someone to talk to and work through those is always crucial.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Definitely. Love that. I guess on that aspect of, you know, someone being on the external and someone being there to help support you, I went through, and I guess quite a while ago, I did a bit of a stream, and it was like an esports research stream. And I actually looked at something that was, it was a paper for Rocket League. And what it did was it was a sort of a video camera that tracked Rocket League players. But it was only in ranked, but what it did was it tracked their reactions. So whenever they scored a goal, it tracked if they were happy or sad. Whenever, you know, something happened in game, it tracked their, I guess, it tracked their eyes, it tracked their eyebrows, their mouth, and their sort of visual statements. Do you think that, you know, based, and it's kind of an in-depth question, a tricky one, but when you, I guess, celebrate a goal, there's a difference between being, you know, enthusiastic and happy over it versus just sort of being mundane and sort of just focused in on it and just sort of like, okay, let's go next. Because I know that, I think when I watch Dig, they're just like, they scored a goal and say, okay, let's go next one. But there's teams that like celebrate that and celebrate that goal.
Yeah, we had a similar thing. We didn't do we didn't like thoroughly research it. I just remember, I think Ryze spoke to Jack or Scrub, and it was the same thing we heard from Dig, is that they always when they score, they just sort of stay locked in and they don't want to get, say, emotional. I mean, We lie somewhere in the middle between Dig and, for example, do you know, I assume, you know, like Misfits, Cash gets very hyped when they score and he gets very, very down when they get scored on. We lie somewhere in the middle of that, but we lean more towards Dig's sort of way of doing it, where we aren't completely like down, or not down, sorry, but like we aren't completely straight faced when we score. We're like, We'll shout a bit. We'll go like nice, but like we won't ever let it affect us. We don't want to get too emotional and like feel like it's over before it's over. And when we get scored on as well, we just try and keep talking. And I mean, it's sort of somewhere in the middle where if you get too emotional really early into the series when you score, I feel like you can sort of like wear yourself out. And
mm.
even though you've got that high point of when you score, that means that the low might be even lower if you're already worn out from getting too hyped and stuff.
For sure.
But yeah, we're somewhere in the middle. We celebrate goals, but we always lock in right after we score. Like in the replay, we all start focusing back up and we don't go like crazy until we win the series. That's when we like fully hype up and go crazy.
Mm, I like that. I like finding the middle ground of what works mm-hmm. between hype and I guess, you know, the end point. And I think, well, you know, not I think, I know that in sort of that sport psychology sort of aspect, it's sort of that arousal zone and you don't want to mm-hmm. be too over-aroused versus too under-aroused. You want to find that, mm-hmm. you know, essentially your flow state whereby you're sort of just locked in. There's a transformation of time where you're just really just focused in and you're able to just play your best without actually acknowledging it. It's sort of just happening. And you're just sort of in that zone. But yeah, I think it's really interesting where you see some teams who do scream. Like I definitely saw, and we're guilty of it as well at the major. I still remember our first game versus Endpoint and the first goal we scored, I think we just went ballistic. And then as soon as we scored that, the last goal to win the set, that was mm-hmm. just like, yeah, that was like, throats are hurting after that sort of screaming, but
yeah.
But I guess you celebrate the end. But yeah, it's really interesting to compare the differences because you can also compare, I guess, how a team, you know, it's sort of a resemblance of a team as well. And I guess it sort of imbues into team culture, like we talked about earlier, whereby, you know, a team that celebrates or sort of acts together still, you know, is in that sort of joint synergy and how a team is reflected on. So it's mm-hmm. it's definitely an interesting statement. I think that, you know, I personally did learn a lot from going to Sweden. I think there's a lot to take to LA this time around, whether it's being a bit more controlled and just keeping dialed in versus some of the top teams. Because I think that, you know, reflecting back, we absolutely blitzed the Endpoint game, but then, well, not really blitzed it, but we won the Endpoint game. But I think mm-hmm. we did wear ourselves out going into the phase game. I think we were still maintaining that high. Like the, you know, high energy, you know, we did that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to, I guess, control that reset. Like, okay, let's reset it back. We said that, but I think saying it is very different to doing it.
Definitely.
Being able to acknowledge, okay, let's just actually reset now. You know, we know what we've done. Let's just go on to the next one. And being able to acknowledge that is crucial. So it's definitely an interesting sort of aspect and area. I guess looking towards the major now, exciting stuff.
definitely.
Talk us through your plans and I guess what you've got going on and, you know, when are you leaving for boot camp and I guess what does that look like and, you know, what have you got planned?
We're boot camping on the 12th. So we set off in less than 10 days, like 8 days from now. And, you know, we're going to boot camp for 8 days. Then we're gonna go to the hotel and stuff. The Epic. I don't know who is in control. ESL is in control of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The ESL have sorted and stuff, and we're gonna do that first 8 days of boot camp. Sort of not fully lock in. I think that especially Rise wants to see it as sort of like half holiday, half. boot camp. I mean, I don't blame him. LA is definitely a nice place to go.
For sure.
I think the boot camp will sort of be a more lax version of what we do in the hotel where at the boot camp we'll sort of be chilling and we'll scrim twice a day, obviously, three times a day and get everything done, but we'll also sort of wanna sightsee and we're going to a Lakers game. Oi. Well. Yeah.
We're going to a Clippers game, so.
Yeah.
I think you've got the one up on the Lakers game, though.
I don't even watch basketball, so.
It's all about the experience, though.
Yeah, it's just a crazy experience. Yeah, we're definitely going to stay focused, though, but we do want to sort of have some downtime, especially in such a nice area and place to be. After that, though, we're going to fully lock in. From the 20th onwards, we'll be fully locked in, fully focused. And I mean, I hope, and I believe in my teammates. I believe in myself. I know we can do what we did in the regionals. It's the same thing in the major. It's just a matter of time until we get to do it.
Yeah, I love that, man. I'm very excited to say it. And I think you put it nicely, being able to, I guess, accept that, you know, you've deserved the trip over to LA. So being able to have that bit of downtime where you can sort of relax and enjoy yourself as well is very crucial. And it sorts, you know, when you're in that sort of boot camp together and it's like together, you know, playing ranked and playing and scrimming, it's nice to have that sort of, you know, downtime away where you can do a few team activities, because, you know, we've got some stuff planned, like going to like Top Golf and just like absolutely smashing some golf balls into the absolute into the air, and just being able to enjoy that downtime.
I mean, I think it's nice as well. I feel like even if you're not fully focused from the start, I feel like when you've sort of got that experience out of the way and, you know, you've done all the cool stuff you want to do in LA or around that area, when that's all done, you won't sort of like feel like you missed out when you start getting like locked in and stuff.
For sure.
So, like I said, especially Rise. Rise is wants to go and see LA. I don't a lot, and he wants to go and do some cool stuff. I feel like even if he maybe plays a bit less, maybe I play a bit less, maybe Vitura plays a bit less, by the time we come back from all that stuff and when we're back from our downtime, we won't feel like there's anything we've missed out on, and we won't focus on it, and we won't be like feeling like, oh, we should have done this, we should have done that, when we're trying to focus. And that, like, from the 20th onwards, when we've got everything out of the way and, you know, experienced everything we wanted to do, I feel like that'll give us a better mentality going into the tournament as well.
I love that. That's a really good way to look at it, man. That's awesome. Now, this is a bit controversial, and I know what you're going to say, but EU versus NA, what are we thinking?
EU any day of the week.
Are you excited to versus NA?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be fun. I like to especially see mechanical players from other regions and stuff. That's something I always like to see, because, you know, it's nice to make some rivals and stuff. And it doesn't have to be like a public rival and like you trash talk each other all the time. But I like to sort of see who's around, and I like to sort of, you know, motivate myself with how good other people are doing, and sort of just try and prove to everyone that I'm better than them all. Like, NA versus EU is definitely going to be a fun matchup. I think this time as well, it might be even more intense, especially because it's in NA's home now as well. They're not in Europe anymore. Yeah. They're definitely going to want to win it this time. I mean, there's some minor regions. There's some minor regions that can definitely do damage as well. I mean, you guys got an upset against Endpoint, and, you know, even though South America didn't have like the best show in Sweden, I know for a fact they can definitely do better. I've heard a lot of praise for Jan. I've heard Jan is really, really good. And I think, obviously, the one I haven't mentioned yet, Sandrock.
Sandrock.
That was a big one in Sweden.
Yeah.
Like, the minor regions are improving a lot, like, very fast. And they only get to play in their sort of own area as well, which is crazy. I mean, I think the more that LAN start kicking off again and stuff, I don't see a reason why there's not other teams in the conversation as well.
Yeah, for sure, man. I can't wait to see it. And I think I saw on Twitter, did you see the fact of, I think, with Sandrock, potentially Ahmed not being able to go? Was it Ahmed?
Yeah, I saw that. It was Ahmed. I'm not sure if he can or can't go still. But I feel like if he can go, Sandrock will definitely be a very good team to watch out for.
Yeah.
But as much as I think Sandrock are good and they're all individually good players, I feel like when they replaced Khalid for Senzo in Sweden, it was a sort of like closest to what like the best thing you could do in that position. Like Khalid for Senzo, if you had to make a sub, I feel like you would do that sub, not because he's worse or better than them, just I think Senzo and Khalid play the most similar, because Ahmad and TRK, they're both like the mechanical
crazy
like just going crazy around the map. Like I think them two were always the main ones on Sandrock that everyone just knew they were just going to go crazy, just abuse every other team in offense. And
yeah.
With Ahmad gone, especially because I don't really know, like, I don't have a stance. I haven't played Sandrock in a while, but I know a lot of people think that Ahmad is the best on that team. And with him gone, I mean, they showed before without Khalid what they can do, but I feel like it would be even harder this time if they did just as good without Ahmad. I think he's a very, very vital player on that team.
It's definitely going to be interesting, isn't it? I've got the groups up now, and I'm just thinking, like, you know, every group's tough, yeah. Right? Every group has every group's quite scary. It's every group's a death group.
There's actually, like, I don't know what people theorize the groups are going to be, but I don't think anyone. I don't want to say that actually, because there's probably going to be someone who adds me on Twitter. Like, I actually got it right. Look, here's the proof. But most people who predicted the groups didn't expect this, I don't think. Every group, I think, has upset potential. I think every group has a potential for an upset.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter the scale of the upset, but I think there's a lot of teams that people definitely aren't expecting to win, even if they just are like 60% of a team winning and 40% of another team. I think that still there's going to be a lot of upsets. Like, your group, I feel like, I mean, you beat Endpoint before, like, why not again? I mean, Furia, as I said before, Yan, I've heard a load of praise for Yan. Apparently he's crazy individually. I mean, I think now that, you know, he's played a LAN, you never know, Furia can do, like, insane stuff. I mean, Group C, I've never seen Team Secret. Yeah, I've never seen them play.
Yeah, it's going to be good as well. Interesting. You never know.
There's so many groups of just random teams that I think could just, on the day, if some team's on a bad day and they're just peaking or in their prime and, like, they're all hyped, there's anything can happen in any group.
100%. I mean, we saw that in Sweden, right, whereby some of the teams had a bit of a shaky start. G2 had a shaky start. NRG had a bit of a shaky start. I think they went to game 5 with the Sam 2 seed, didn't they? But, yeah, you know, anything can happen. And, you know, LAN's different environment, and it's, I guess, being able to acknowledge that, right? Being able to think that, you know, okay, LAN's a bit different. There's going to be different vibes. There's going to be, you know, a crowd, right? That's going to be a big one. Yeah. Being able to, I guess, deal with the crowd and the noise, and especially, you know, for some of these, you know, it's going to be tricky. Are you looking forward to, I guess, the crowd, and what do you think?
The crowd is in top 8, right? It will be when the crowd is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something to aim for. I mean, I can't even begin to fathom what it will be like playing in front of people in the crowd, like, just chanting for either team. Like, I can't even begin to believe what it's like. But, I mean, I don't know, per se, how good we'll be under that sort of pressure from a crowd. But I think we've proven to everyone that no matter what people think of us, or no matter what situation we're in, we can always pull through. And I mean, I don't see why we couldn't do it again. I mean, we're all confident, and we all know we can do it.
100%.
So I think there's no reason why we can't.
100%. I love that mentality. And it's just about just having that aspect and acknowledging that, right? It's going to be really, really good. Man, I'm excited. The realization just kicked in again that I'm leaving tomorrow night. It's just crazy.
I still can't believe it. I don't even know what to say. Like, it hasn't set in still. It still hasn't set in that we've won a regional yet to me. I still can't believe even that. Like, it's just insane.
Yeah, for sure. Love that. But, hey, the fruits of your hard work are definitely going to pay off soon, and I can definitely guarantee that. So it's about taking it. Game by game,
Top of the group.
Yeah, man, you know, see what happens. You know, I don't know if you know, but Carmi's never lost a game to NRG, so.
I hope you can keep it up. I mean,
it's going to be good.
You never know. I mean, maybe, you know, bit of a insane game from Renegades, you know.
Bit of an upset.
Quick 3-0.
Quick, yeah. 3-0, you know. cheeky Brazil in game 1. Don't worry about it. See what happens. Take it game by game. But yeah, it's going to be good. I think, and do you think that those teams who, and I think it's probably the obvious answer, but those teams that are boot camping have a major advantage over the teams that aren't?
I guess it depends on where their location is already. I mean, I feel like you always get things you'd never get playing online from a boot camp because you're next to your team and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest effect will be on if teams aren't boot camping and have to deal with the jet lag afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, that is the main thing. But for teams in NA, I don't know if any teams in NA aren't boot camping. I'm not 100% sure, but if there's teams in NA that aren't boot camping, I don't think they'll be affected too much, but I think it will definitely positively affect the teams that do boot camp, because, I mean, playing around your teammates is just... It's not completely different environment. It's just like... It just feels different. It's really nice to do. I mean, even like fist bumping your teammates after a goal, like, is just a nice thing. I mean, you 100%. Get used to playing together. And yeah, I mean, 100%. I think the boot camp will thrive more on the stage and stuff, and they're just more used to playing next to each other.
Yeah, for sure. You know, in Sweden, when we're on the main stage, we weren't allowed to fist bump each other, but we still did it.
was it a COVID thing? Or
I think so, but then it was just like I guess it makes sense. So we did. Did we do it? Oh no, we did air once. We did like air fist bumps to each other because the gap between each other is still pretty wide. So we're doing air once.
Yeah.
But I think.
Yeah, I have no idea what we're gonna do after goals, but I mean, I assume we'll probably just fist bump. Like, that's the common esport thing is look after on. Anything that goes well, you just fist bump and then you just look back and wanna...
Love that. I think I think one of the tricks that we had, we did it versus Fury on the main stage when we 3-0'd them. They scored a goal and we screamed mm-hmm. for them. Like, we yelled for them. Like, nice. And that was... Yeah, we looked up at their faces and they were just so confused, like, wait, what? It was really good to do that. It was good. Bit of a throw off, so.
Yeah, just confuse them.
Love that. I guess as we start to turn off the gas, as I like to call it, and roll down the hill towards the end, is there anything, is there any foods that you're looking to try over in NA?
I don't know exactly. Is it a Popeye's chicken burger or a chicken sandwich? I don't
understand
how it works. I've heard a lot of praise for Popeye's. I don't think I've heard as many good things, but Mr. Beast Burger.
That's a good shout, actually.
Just a fun thing to try, you know.
That's a good shout.
You might as well. There's a lot of random things, like... I haven't tried most fast food in England anyway. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess when we're at the hotel or something, or if we're going out somewhere and at the boot camp, if we just find some random place, we're like, oh, let's just go there. I mean, I think it'll just be like that. But
yeah,
definitely Mr. Beast Burger and Popeyes, just two ones that come to my head straight away.
Yeah, I didn't even think about Mr. Beast Burger. That's actually good shit. The one I want to try is In-N-Out. I'm looking forward towards
trying In-N-Out.
In-N-Out or Shake
Someone
Shack.
Someone told me to do that.
Yeah. Those burgers look pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even a massive burger guy, but I mean, I think it'll definitely be a different, like completely different in America. Like, have you seen the videos comparing what's in the UK or like in other countries' burgers compared to the US one? And the US one has like... seven different chemicals that aren't in any food anywhere else.
I guess that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, crazy.
I mean, yeah.
One thing as well, I think Fever was looking forward to getting, I think 7-Eleven have like a Slurpee cup or something.
Oh yeah, they do.
Like
they
the Rocket
do.
League Cup, and then you can get like redeem it for like the in-game decal or whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
The decal. Yeah, I want the decal as well.
I think I might just have to buy a few cups and then give it to some OCE boys as well. Give the code to some OCE guys.
Yeah. I'll probably do that. I mean, is it at the same time as the LAN? Like, is it still going to be a thing then? I mean,
yeah.
I think
it'll still be valid. So yeah, we looked it up. So.
Okay, yeah, definitely that, because I wanted that decal and I was going to ask someone in NA to get it for me, but if it's possible at the LAN, then I'll definitely do that.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. I guess as we wrap up, and it's a thing that I did with all people that come on the show, and I guess we can cater it towards, you know, whoever's on the show, but I guess in this case specific to Rocket League, you know, after I edit this and chuck it on the website and stuff like that, you know, there'll be a whole bunch of new viewers that aren't on Twitch that are listening in, and we'll go through it and even on YouTube and stuff like that. And a lot of those guys that I've received messages from and tons of messages from in the past have, you know, been those guys that are, you know, low champ, pushing into GC potentially, and looking to just take their gameplay to the next level and look to get a little bit better. So I guess for all those guys, you know, looking to just get a little bit better at their game, what advice would you give them?
This might be cliche, but to me, it's very, very important. I mean, I said I had 11,000 hours, and I was never naturally, like, very good at Rocket League. I started off pretty bad, and I've always worked as, like, my main goal is to work harder than every pro. And as much as you feel like you might hit a brick wall or you feel like you're not improving, even, like, there's not many shortcuts to success. There's not many shortcuts to success. I won't say that there isn't any. There's definitely ways to improve faster, and but like the main thing is just work hard. It's always the best for muscle memory and just keeping your like mind involved in the game. Like, it's very cliche, but the reason it's cliche is because it's true. So
love that. I think that really just summarizes it really nicely, just to have the, I guess, ideology that at the end of the day, you know, hours do matter, right? And how much that you want it and how much you want to improve. And I think the quality of your improvement as well in regards to what you do matters as well, right? Whether it's just sitting in free play for X amount of hours versus actually queuing up and going through the motion. I think they're all important traits that are important to really put into the big picture.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just do whatever you like. I mean, don't try and force anything, but if you want to go far, just do whatever you enjoy. And I mean, if you put enough time in, there's no reason why it can't happen. I mean, hard work always pays off.
Love that, mate. That's awesome. That's a really nice, that's an really nice way to do it. And I'll probably quote that. That's a really nice way. So awesome, man. For everyone listening as well, where can we find you, you know, your Twitch and any of the socials that you use?
On Twitter, you can find me at
twitter.com/@
JoyoKami with no spaces. It's two I's in Kami, JoyoKami. On YouTube, I will just be called Joyo. You can probably find me if you type in Joyo Rocket League. And on Twitch, I am JoyoKami with one I. And that's pretty much all the social media I use. And I barely use Twitch Twitch anyway.
Yeah, I meant to say Twitter at the start, but I said Twitch for some reason. Awesome. Nice way to correct me. Awesome. Fantastic. Awesome, man. Well, you know, I absolutely loved jumping on it and running through the motions and I guess getting a bit of insight in your back history and then, you know, sort of just understanding your perspective towards Rocket League and all the sort of different performance characteristics. I think we summed it up quite nicely, whether it be, you know, ranked, the ideology of, you know, placebos and getting reverse swept and really summarizing up some of those really key psychological sort of factors that can be implemented towards Rocket League, but then also summarizing it really nicely at the end towards the major. And, you know, I think everyone's going to be watching. I'm going to be watching. I can't wait. And we've got to make sure that we get a, if we can, I don't know what the restrictions would be. I think it's pretty good because people, there's like a communal kitchen where you can like eat meals together. We got to make sure to get like a nice photo together. I'm looking forward to the odds.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be sick.
That sounds good, yeah.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming on and enjoying it. And I will look forward to seeing you at the LA Major. Can you believe it?
I still can't, but yeah, this was great. I mean, it was fun to, you know, talk about what I think about, like, sort of things, and I'm glad you had me on here, and yeah, I mean, I'll see you in LA.
See you in LA, baby.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much for everyone tuning in to this episode. As usual, you can find MindClickers at mindclickers.com, but then also on MindClickers on Twitter as well, and my personal profile is coach_LBP. Stay updated with all the Renegades content and look forward towards everything there. Thank you very much for tuning in today's episode, and I will see you in the next one. Bye.